A big victory in Alabama. Judge Roy Moore beats the establishment and talks about God. What does it mean for the nation?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, so think of it. The man known as the Ten Commandments judge, Justice Roy Moore, wins in the GOP primary. He wins against a candidate, Luther Strange, known as an establishment candidate. And we are told that the Republican establishment spent $30 million campaigning for Strange and against Moore. And perhaps more importantly, President Trump endorsed Luther Strange, and yet Moore beat him decisively. What does this say for Alabama? What does this say for politics nationally? What does this say culturally on the national level as well? We'll talk about that today. Also, friends, I wrote an article that deals with race tensions, race relations in America, and it's called "If Hands Up, Don't Shoot Isn't True." If that didn't happen, my 18-year-old namesake, Michael Brown, who was killed in Ferguson, Missouri, by police officer Darren Wilson, if, in fact, that is not true, if hands up, don't shoot, that narrative is not true, why do so many black Americans believe that? Is it because they're not educated? No. Is it because they're just duped by the Al Sharptons and Jesse Jacksons? No. Is it because, well, they're just all the left-wing media and the Black Lives Matter groups are stirring up trouble? No, no. And look, whites are duped by race baiters just as much as blacks are. And whites listen to radical media just as much as blacks do. And whites have activist groups just as much as blacks do. No, there is a reason. And the reason is personal experience over the course of a lifetime has given them a different view of the justice system than many white Americans. So how do we find understanding? And I've even got some words of appeal for NFL players. Words of appeal and I hope wisdom for NFL players. I want to put that out today. Also, we did a Skype interview. We have it on our YouTube channel, on our website, where I interviewed the controversial black minister, Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, who claims that racism actually doesn't exist. Think, what in the world is this man talking about? We'll talk about it. We'll take it up here on The Line of Fire. But you can watch the videos. You can read my latest articles. I've got an article. I urge every pastor listening and every concerned congregant listening to read my article. Dear Pastor, are you a shepherd or are you a hireling? It's on my website. AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. There you can see it for yourself. Click on that link if you're watching on YouTube, our live stream there, AskDrBrown.org. I've got several recent articles, the Hands Up, Don't Shoot article. I've got the article on leadership, Dear Pastor, you a shepherd or a hireling, and shortly we'll have an article up about the victory of Justice Roy Moore as well, and the video with Jesse Lee Peterson and some other recent videos as well, race relationships in black and white. And you know, if you've been listening to me, everything I say is redemptive. Nothing I say is just wasted words, and I am absolutely not trying to stir up trouble. I am absolutely not trying to stir up dissension. I'm trying to be constructive. My goal is not to put out controversial videos and to put out controversial radio shows and write controversial articles so that everybody gets worked up. Oh, but my ratings. No. I want the favor of God and I want to help you. I'm not looking for good ratings. I'm looking for the favor of God and I'm looking to help you. Let the ratings take care of themselves. And what people say is not my concern. What God says is the concern. So we're going to have a lot of constructive discussion today right here on The Line of Fire. Shake the nation, change the world. Change the world.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let's focus on Alabama. Here we have the GOP runoff between Justice Roy Moore, who is the former Chief Justice twice, actually, in Alabama, and Luther Strange, underwritten by GOP establishment and endorsed by President Trump, endorsed and supported by Vice President Mike Pence. On the other side, you had folks like Sarah Palin and Steve Bannon, and even cabinet members who were clearly on the side of Justice Moore. Now, I began following his career probably over 20 years ago when he had put a homemade version of the Ten Commandments hanging from his court in Alabama. And the ACLU sued him, and he lost and ultimately defied the courts. And so he had to face that battle and lose there. Then when he gets elected to be the Chief Justice of Alabama, let me just get the exact weight of this here. Chief Justice of Alabama, he installed a 5,280-pound granite block featuring constitutional quotes and two large tablets with the Ten Commandments outside the state judicial building. Yeah, Justice Roy Moore. And, of course, he was ordered to remove it, ultimately unseat it, and then won re-election, but then decided he was ultimately going to run for Senate. Now, there are some big lessons here. And I want to make this as clear as I possibly can. Now, I can't confirm this, but I've read that Jared Kushner had encouraged President Trump. So Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who apparently is very influential in the Trump White House, had encouraged him to endorse Luther Strange. And from what we can tell, Jared and Ivanka are much more liberal in their persuasions, and Ivanka wanted to reach out more to Planned Parenthood and celebrating Gay Pride Month and things like this. So much more liberal, much more Democrat-leaning, and to the extent that President Trump has gone with their counsel or gone with their advice, if these things are true and accurate, it's gone against his base. It's gone against those who voted him in. So President Trump supported Luther Strange and went down to campaign for him on Friday. But amazingly, during the campaign rally, President Trump said things like, look, I may have made a mistake in endorsing him. I think he's going to win, but I may have made a mistake. He also said, if his opponent wins, I'm going to really campaign for him. Campaign like heck, to paraphrase, for him. So he said that. And immediately last night, after Roy Moore was announced the victor in Alabama, now again, he still has to beat the Democratic candidate, but that seems fairly likely in a conservative state like Alabama, or a strongly Republican state like Alabama, where Justice Moore has been so popular for so many years. But here's the deal. Trump immediately congratulates Roy Moore and then deletes his immediately earlier tweets supporting Luther Strange. Isn't that something? All right, so A few lessons to learn. Number one, Moore's victory reminds us that the same anti-establishment wave that brought President Trump to power brought him to victory. To the extent that President Trump is identified with the establishment, to that extent, he loses much of his base. To the extent that Roy Moore was identified as opposing the establishment, which he does, quote, wants to drain the swamp. I think it's pretty clear he's not going to be bought. He's not going to bow down. He has already lived that out. Like it or not, he's already lived that out. Oh, and Huffington Post, this tells you all you needed to know. This is the headline on Huffington Post last night. I immediately went to look. GOP picks conservative Christian anti-establishment candidate. Yeah. GOP picks conservative Christian anti-establishment candidate. That tells me everything. I'm sorry. That's my interpretation of the Huffington Post. I'm sorry. I told you what it meant to me. Here's what the Post said. Alabama earthquake. GOP picks outsider bigot. Oh, you see, I gave you my interpretation of it. When the Huffington Post calls someone an outsider bigot, GOP picks outsider bigot, calls it an Alabama earthquake, what they're telling you is the interpretation I put on it. Ah, sorry. I told you what it really meant. What it really means is they picked a Christian conservative who is anti-GOP establishment. That sounds good to me. So that's the wave that brought Roy Moore in. Does it have implications for the rest of the nation? If you believe the news on Breitbart.com, and Breitbart was all in for Justice Moore. If you believe their reports, establishment candidates around the country are shaking. Those that are up for re-election, GOP establishment candidates are up for re-election in 2018. And basically, the message that was being sent last night was this. And you have to realize, when President Trump did the rally for Luther Strange, people chanted USA, USA. They were chanting that more than they were chanting Luther Strange, Luther Strange. And there were people that are saying, President, we love you, but we're voting for Roy Moore. All right. So the message was loud and clear. President Trump made a big mistake, and I hope he learns from it. I hope he learns that those who voted for him did not vote for him to be an establishment candidate. Those who voted for him did not vote for him to play games with the establishment, be it Democratic or Republican. Those who voted for him to, quote, drain the swamp, not become part of the swamp. You say, is he tough enough to go against it? Yeah, he makes mistakes. He says things that I think are stupid and that regrettable. I wish he didn't say. But one thing you can't question is he's bullheaded. And if he wants to go in a certain direction, he's going to go there. This is the direction he needs to go, anti-establishment. That's what's going to empower him to get a conservative agenda pushed through. So the message being sent was this. We've had it with your compromise and your political games. We've had it with career politicians in general. You represent what we reject. You represent one of the major reasons we voted for Donald Trump. Your time in D.C. is over. That message was sent loud and clear in the state of Alabama. But here's what really got my attention. This was the big thing to me. Because, look, politics plays a role in America, but it's secondary. And I am patriotic to our country, but I'm far more allegiant to the Lord. All right? My highest allegiance is to him and his kingdom. And if America turns away from God, then I stand with God. All right? And that's your heart, too, if you're a lover of Jesus. So our patriotism is subjected to our love for God and our allegiance to his kingdom. So look at what Roy Moore says. So, again, known as the Ten Commandments judge, just check this out. Comments last year, last night after the victory, as long as it's constitutional, as long as it advances our society, our culture, our country, I will be supportive, as long as it's constitutional. But we have to return to knowledge of God and the Constitution of the United States to the United States Congress. I believe we can make America great, but we must make America good, and you cannot make America good without acknowledging the sovereign source of that goodness, the sovereign source of our law, liberty, and government, which is Almighty God. We have become a nation, he said, that has distanced ourselves from the very foundation. Washington said that of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. And he spoke of protests, demonstrations, mobs, racial strife, but said we're all made in the image of God. And I read this. I thought that's talking points from my book, Saving a Sick America. That's straight out of my book. I don't mean he got it from me. I mean we got it from the same place, from our nation's founding and from the Bible. Here's what I wrote, Saving a Sick America. You tell me if this doesn't sound like what Justice Moore just said. Quote, now there is a widely circulated, powerful quote attributed to Alexis de Tocqueville, a quote that scholars agree does not originate with him. But regardless of who first uttered these words, if not Tocqueville, then one of his contemporaries, I wholeheartedly affirm the sentiments they reflect. Quote, America is great because America is good, and if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great. This is from my book, Saving a Sick America. This sounds like just what Justice Moore said last night. These words underlie the central argument of this book, Saving a Sick America. America can be great only to the extent that America is good. And for America to be good, it must recapture its biblical heritage. Stated another way, a theocracy is not the answer. Returning to God's word is the answer. And what's one of the major chapters in the book and a way to deal with the abortion culture in our society and the despising of the weak and the marginalizing of the weak in our society? It's the recognition that every one of us is created in the image of God. And that's what Justice Moore says is the key in the midst of all the protests and the tensions, going back to the realization that we're all created in the image of God. I want to get Saving a Sick America to Justice Moore and his team and say, hey, man, let's distribute this. Let's get this out because we're speaking the same language. Now, does all of America agree with that? No, of course not. And Justice Moore was voted in by conservative voters, largely Christian-based voters in Alabama. But this is not the only part of the nation that resonates with this message. And here's our opportunity to show the world that God has a better way, that God's ways are ways of life. He made us. He created us. He knows what's best for us. As we follow him, we find the path of life, eternal life, unending life, abundant life. We'll be right back. We're going to shift gears, talk again about racial tensions. I want to get your feedback on the other side of the break.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. All right, let's put some questions out there. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. By the way, to everyone watching our live YouTube stream, you can call. I know you're watching, and it's easy to type in comments, but you can call. Phones are open, too. It's not just folks listening by radio that can call in, 866-348-7884. I want to talk to you from my heart, all right, as honestly and personally as I can. I want to thank many, many callers to this radio show over the years who have helped fill in blind spots in my life. I want to thank those of you who've called full of respect and honor, speaking love to me, appreciation for me, with words like, I love you, Dr. Brown, but... And then you have proceeded to explain to me a perspective that I didn't have before. Or let's say I had it in limited proportion. You see, what I always try to do when I'm engaging any major issue is I do my best to understand where the other side is coming from. I do my best to put myself in their shoes. Can I put myself in the shoes of a Mexican immigrant living in America? No, I'm not from Mexico, and I don't know what it's like to be an immigrant in America. Can I put myself in the shoes of a black American growing up in the inner city of America? No, I can't. I'm not black, and I didn't grow up in the inner city. Can I put myself in the shoes of someone that believes they're a man trapped in a woman's body and a struggle like this? No, I can't. I do my best to, but I can't. But here's what I can do. And I'm mentioning all kinds of different situations, right? And I'm not saying there's moral right or wrong. I'm just mentioning different situations that obviously can't relate to. Can I relate to what it's like to be a Hollywood celebrity making $20 million a year? And no, I can't. I know what it's like to be a public figure, but no, I can't relate to that. But here's what I can do. I can talk to enough people, and I can listen. I can listen. I can understand. I can pray. I can ask God to give me sensitivity. And that's exactly what's happened in many major issues that I've tackled over the years, that I've seen as I've listened, that I can now convey things in a way that others will say, you know, Dr. Brown, you understand. No, I don't. I can't fully understand. We know that. We grasp that. All right. But I can have enough empathy. My heart can break. I can say, oh, okay, this is something important. Now I better understand the issues. You know what that means? I could get up and play the role of a gay activist theologian and passionately argue for the gay interpretation, even though I know it's wrong, and make a social case, make a justice case, make a theological case. I could do it passionately. I could do it, I think, as well as a gay activist or a gay theologian. I understand it enough, and I've prayed enough over the issues and listened enough and tried to take things in enough that I believe I can do it. I could get up and play the role of an Orthodox Jewish rabbi. Of course, that's easier. I'm Jewish myself and grew up not believing in Jesus, but I wasn't Orthodox. I could get up and play the role of an Orthodox Jewish rabbi and debate the issues and do a great job of doing it and get people concerned and then say, okay, here are the answers. Here's why we know Jesus really is the Messiah, how we know Yeshua is our Messiah. So I want to thank you who have called in over the years and differed with me or shared perspectives, or just as we discussed issues. When I heard the two sides, I thought, very interesting, very enlightening. Earlier this week, I got calls from, for example, a conservative, black, former military man, and he weighed in on the NFL protests. That was a helpful perspective. And I got calls from people, different ethnic backgrounds, different social backgrounds, different race backgrounds, and their perspectives were very, very helpful. Now, ultimately, I'm going to do my best to determine right and wrong by what's written in Scripture, all right? I'm going to look at what's written in Scripture and now apply that to every area of life as best as I can. Sometimes it's very obvious and easy. Sometimes it's not so obvious and easy. But that's always going to be the goal. But then when we listen to different sides, when we take in different sides, what happens is that we now understand, there's more to the argument. I see where this one's coming from. I see where that one's coming from. So let me ask you a question. And I'm opening the phones now for honest calls. All right? 866-348-7884. The hands up, don't shoot narrative is a myth. My namesake, Michael Brown, 18 years old, killed in Ferguson. That's a myth. That did not happen. The Department of Justice was waiting to hang the police of Ferguson, so to say, metaphorically speaking, and nail them and say, you're guilty. But the evidence simply wasn't there. If there had even been a shred of strong evidence, it would have been pushed. It didn't happen because it wasn't there. It's unfortunate that the young man died. We feel the pain and recognize the pain that his parents may have felt and certainly felt, absolutely felt. I should say we can feel some of the pain that they certainly felt. But hands up, don't shoot, it's a myth. Never happened. Never happened. And yet every day I see news, every single day, referencing the death of Michael Brown as a key civil rights moment in recent American history. So here's my question, and I want you to call in and be as honest as you can. And I want you to call in and not worry about offending anyone. And if you can't call, you're watching on YouTube, post your comments there in the chat, and I'll check them during my next break. But here's the question. Why do so many black Americans still believe hands up, don't shoot, did happen? Why are so many black Americans skeptical of the police and skeptical of the courts? Why? I want you to be as honest as you can. You can call and say, I'm white, I'm black, I'm Hispanic, I'm Asian, or you don't have to identify that at all. I just want your opinion. I have my views, and I believe my views are right, but they are opinions ultimately, because we're talking about large segments of society and millions of people, and I'm making general statements, okay? There are many whites who believe hands up, don't shoot is true. There are many blacks who don't believe it. But overall, I would say if you did a survey, a white versus black survey, that you would find, by and large, that less whites, percentage-wise, believe hands up, don't shoot really happened, and more blacks, percentage-wise, do believe it when you compare the two. Why? Why is that the case? Is it life experience? Is it listening to race baiters? Is it the influence of secular media? Why is it? We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. But let me strongly encourage you, friends. I'm writing literally day and night. Now sometimes two or three articles in a day. You say, well, how do I keep up with it? They're all on our website. They're all at askdrbrown.org. We're putting out several new videos a week, often on cutting-edge issues. Happening in the news, you say, man, is there another perspective? Yes, there is. Here we are, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. So go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. We've got the videos there. We've got the articles there. We've got our radio broadcast there. Check it out for yourself. And if you don't get my weekly emails, come on, we want to be a blessing. Let's join hands together, all right? Get my emails. Go to AskDrBrown.org. As soon as you have a break, sign up for the emails. This way we'll be in touch on a weekly basis. Plus, I've got a great free ebook to send your way. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just noticed a question on our live stream on YouTube. Welcome, welcome to the line of fire. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. By the way, an article that was posted within the last 24 hours. This article is, hang on, just got another feed in my ears here. Not sure where it's coming from. There we go. All right, thank you. Article entitled, Dear Pastor, Are You a Shepherd or a Hireling? Please read that, pastor's leader. Share it with your colleagues. You can find it at AskDrBrown.org. But very interesting question just raised on YouTube. Dr. Brown, why do people support the Confederate flag, and at the same time, those same people say the NFL players are disrespecting the American flag? That's a great question. And because I'm not one that's an advocate for the Confederate flag, I can't give you an answer for that. Just telling you the truth. By the way, there's a guy I just noticed on our YouTube feed, Eddie. Hey, Eddie, you're posting all these challenges. Call the show. You're making all these challenges, and oh, man, nobody can answer me. Call the show. 866-348-7884. That's the number to call. 866-34-TRUTH. And here's my question for everyone listening. We know, according to all reports, all information, we know that hands up, don't shoot is a myth. We know it is 100% false, that is not what happened to Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. All right, according to everything we know and understand. Why do many black Americans still believe the narrative? What can we learn from that? Now, if you're a white supremacist, that's easy.
Well, it's because blacks are ignorant. It's because they're not educated. It's because they just listen to Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. It's because they just get in a mob mentality with Black Lives Matter.
Those are lies. That's the voice. That's the voice of white supremacism. Now, are there some blacks who listen to race baiters? Yes, and there are some whites who listen to race baiters. Are there some blacks who are uneducated? Yes, and there are some whites who are uneducated. Are there some blacks who are heavily influenced by the left-wing media? Yes, and there are some whites who are heavily influenced by the left-wing media. And if we keep going, keep asking questions, are there whites who are influenced by radical groups like Antifa? Yeah, just like there are blacks that are influenced by groups like Black Lives Matter. That doesn't answer the question. That's just more garbage, more nonsense, all right? The fact of the matter is, what we are dealing with is this. Many black Americans have a different life experience. Many black Americans have a different life experience than many white Americans. They have a different experience with the police. They have a different experience with justice system. And because of that, they are more skeptical. That's the reason. It's not educated, just stirred up by my... There's a reason that many black Americans thought O.J. Simpson was not guilty. I wanted him to be not guilty. I liked the guy. I mean, what I knew of him as an athlete and an actor, I liked the guy. I wanted him to be not guilty. But the evidence seemed overwhelmingly against him. But there are black Americans that said he's obviously innocent. The police planted... The police planted stuff? Yeah, there was a fundamental mistrust in the political system, the police system, the court system, the justice system. There is a fundamental mistrust. Why? I stand with the police, I stand with our courts, but I believe there are problems that need to be addressed. And if we're going to address them, we've got to move forward and do it as one. Can we? Can we listen before we speak? Can we understand before we form an opinion? Is that too much to ask? We'll be back with your calls.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to the broadcast, 866-348-7884. Hey, friends, just a reminder, yesterday was the release date of Saving a Sick America. You want to get some hope in your bones? You want to get some faith rising? Oh, yeah, realistic assessment. I'm talking the opening chapters of this book. You'll be thinking, oh, my. I had no idea we were this far gone as a nation. I had no idea where we've come from as a nation. I think you will find it tremendously eye-opening. But then every chapter, practical. Every chapter, here's the problem. Here's how we messed up. Here's how to turn it. Here's a biblically based way to turn it. All the major problems in our nation have a biblical solution. I am not hearing God say, it's too late for America. I am not feeling God say, throw in the towel and capitulate. No, it's time to stand. What does light do when you put it in dark places? It shines. And the darker America is, the more what we have is needed by the nation. And as I've been preaching on these themes from the heart before God, and you know I see the problems. I write about them day and night. I talk about them day and night. If anybody's aware of the moral, spiritual illness of America, I'm there. I'm on the front lines. You know how many people send me bad news every day, all night? Dr. Brown, have you seen this? Mike, have you seen this? You got to read this. You got to look at this. Most of it I've already seen. Some I haven't seen. And it's the kind of stuff you pull your hair out. I'm aware of it. I'm not living in denial, but I believe God. I firmly believe it's not too late for America. I believe the Spirit of God laid it in my heart, write a book on the fall and rise of America. So you can watch the trailer at savingasickamerica.com. If you order on Amazon, once you order, remember to post your review once you read the book. Post it on Amazon. That helps other readers know about your positive experience. So here's the question. Here's the question. We know, according to all accounts, even Department of Justice study, that the narrative in Ferguson, Missouri, hands up, don't shoot, never happened. Why do so many black Americans still believe it? I refuse to believe it's because they're less educated, because they just listen to the race baiters, because they're provoked by Black Lives Matter. I refuse to believe that. All right? That is derogatory and ugly, and I don't believe it for a split second. Oh, yeah, you have bad elements in white society, black society, Jewish society, Hispanic society, Asian society. Of course. Of course. And so many across the board in our society are just led like sheep by the activists and the major agitating voices and the secular media. Yeah, I recognize that. That's across the board. But what I've learned, 9 years of doing talk radio and countless calls from people of different color and ethnicity, is not everybody's experience in America is the same. That's my take. That's what I believe. I want to hear from you. We will start with Diana in Winston. All right, we won't go there. We'll start with Tess in New Jersey. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You bet.
I'm a black female. I'm a conservative. And I wanted to answer your question from my perspective.
Please.
I'm also a born-again Christian. And I have my mother's side of the family, and I have my father's side of the family. And my mother basically raised me because my mother and my father were divorced when I was around 3 years old. But his side of the family, my mother's side of the family, I should say, they're doctors, they're lawyers, psychologists, you know, mm-hmm. professionals.
Yep.
And not one person in that side of the family has ever had a run-in with a police officer, has ever gone to jail, or has ever had any problems with the justice system. Mm. My father's side of the family, however, has a different mentality, what people would call a ghetto mentality, basically. You know, mm-hmm. poorer mentality where they sell drugs, they spend a lot of time out on the streets, they're unemployed, and they are uneducated, and they go to jail like it's a vacation, and they have run-ins with the cops all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'd also like to add that on my mother's side of the family structure is intact. Everyone has a mother and a present father. Mm-hmm. My dad's side of the family, not so.
Yeah.
You know, the fathers are MIA.
That's the biggest thing. Obviously, the absence of the father and the breakdown of the family structure is the door that leads to all the social problems.
Exactly. But because of that, because of being raised, we all know that the Lord tells us what is right. And to have a mother and a father is right for, it's best for a balance so that it, when you grow up as a male in the family, you have a mother that nurtures you, but you also have a father that teaches you what it's like to be a man.
Absolutely.
And the mother is more of the emotional figure because she's the nurturer. So you have a mother, and I think Jesse Peterson had brought this up before. I don't agree with everything that he says. Like, I do believe racism exists, but he has said this before, which I think is an excellent point. When you have a bunch of males in a society that are only raised by their mothers, and they see their mother's emotional reactions, and they only learn how to react within their emotions. And they're indoctrinated in this kind of victim mentality, where they are weak and they are unable to do things, and anybody that questions them or butts heads with them, they immediately slip into this victim mentality and they go emotional. That's why when the cops stop them, I've been stopped by a police officer before and he says, "Miss, license and registration." I say, "Yes, officer." And I ask nicely, "Why was I stopped?" And the officer tells me, and every single time I've been let go, most of the time without even a ticket, because I was
right.
You know,
you had the environment, the upbringing. Even though there was divorce in the family, there was still a stable family structure that you came from, one that had the male-female pattern there established. Look, the world's best father is not a mother, and the world's best mother is not a father. God made us differently. That's
but
why
I did have a stepfather.
I did have a stepfather. Okay. Right. So that's major, and I'm glad you mentioned that. So in point of fact, a child cannot come into the world without a father and mother. And that is for a reason. They both play an essential role in the upbringing of the child. So, yeah, you are hitting on a key issue. And, again, even the difference in perspective. I've had Africans who've moved over to the States who are highly educated, say, from Nigeria, and they say, "Oh, we don't relate to this. We have a very different perspective."
Absolutely.
So, again, it's not the goal is not to attack. The goal is to be constructive. But, yes, that life experience, so critically important. By the way, Tess, were you watching on our YouTube stream? And
yes, I was. I was in the comment section, actually.
Awesome. Okay, I just got a note from one of our team members to ask, "Hey, thank you. Thank you for weighing in." And, again, friends, watching on YouTube, call in. The same number works, 866-34-TRUTH. Important comments from Tess. Thank you so much. She was referencing also the video Skype interview with Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson. Very controversial. I warn you up front. But you can see that also on our website, AskDrBrown.org. Let's go over to Raleigh. Ron, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, thanks, Dr. Brown. it's just so much in this that I don't even know where to start. So I'll kind of give you a little, you know, the issue here is history. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know American history. You know, you mentioned something about the family structure being broken down. Well, a lot of, you know, Africans who came over here, they tried to have families, and someone broke their families up, sold their kids off, sold their wives off. So who was responsible for that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when they sold the family off, did the Africans who were in America, were they destroyed, victimized? Did it hurt when they lost their families, or did it just move on? You know, but I know in African American history, it devastated them when they lost their families, sold as cattle, as chattel.
Let me ask you this important question. I want to come back to you. I've read that in the early 1900s, there was a lot more stability in the African-American family than there is now. and that there was a great rebuilding after the horrors of slavery, which absolutely did terrible destruction to the family by choice, by the choice of the slave owners. That you didn't have the man to be there. Do you think the welfare system has contributed to that today?
Well, the welfare system has had a clause in it that they couldn't have the man in the house. Mm-hmm. And that drove the man out of the house because they needed those benefits, and that man couldn't find a job. But
Stay here. We got a break. I go straight back to you on the other side of the break. I only raise that to say that I'm looking at larger systemic issues. I think the welfare problem, even if the welfare system was well intended, it has hurt families, poor families, black and white and Hispanic. It has hurt them in many ways more than it has helped them. Yeah, big issues. We'll be right back.
Send it, Lord. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Friends, we're committed to having serious conversations. I'm not primarily concerned with if I offend someone. I want to be loving and I want to speak the truth. Those are the key things. If I do that, ultimately I'll help people, not hurt them. And we're going to have discussions that are uncomfortable. But how else are we going to make progress unless people can call in and express their views, and then you can say why you agree or disagree. But let us listen to one another, learn from one another, and then more clearly form our own perspectives and come to our conclusions. All right, Ron and Raleigh, thanks for holding. Back to you, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, and the key word here is compassion. It's the key word. And so, like the caller was saying before, that, you know, the family system is broken down. Well, you know, it was, you know, the slave master broke that family system down so he could dominate the race in order to maintain them and keep them enslaved. Now, that's moved out of slavery, and of course, slavery is not finished. But there was other things that they put in systems, and they used the legal system. They used the court system in order to to put these laws on these, took away their culture, their language, their religion, their name, you know, their connection to their family, even back at home in slavery in Africa. Then you come out of that, and then you have, you know, from 1865, we had a golden period from 1866 and probably like 1880, and then you go into the Jim Crow period. And in this Jim Crow period, what are they using to subjugate black people? Well, you had the overseer is now moving into the police force, and he's policing. They had laws on the books in North Carolina that they called a black man on the street. They could stop him and put him in jail because he wasn't working anywhere. This is North Carolina law. You see, and so it's the law. Now, so if you take, if you have a police, and a lot of times when the Ku Klux Klan came to terrorize these black Americans, now this ain't an illegal alien we're talking about. You know, this is a black American, this is an American citizen. And when they had the Klan in the yard burning crosses and hanging the family, they couldn't call the police because the police was in the Klan out there helping burn the house down. You see, and if this was going on for 48 minutes an hour, and we're using, you know, as a metaphor.
For our history, for our history.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 48 minutes, and now you're talking about 2 minutes, you know, that the police are trying to be religious and now do the right thing, but protect all citizens, and then you're telling them, oh, you ought to respect them, or it's all on your head. You know, and there was it's then in South Carolina where the police officer was, you know, police are killing black men over a traffic stop, you know, and I happen to be a black American, and I have 2 sons in America, and my uncles and aunts fought in wars to protect the rights for Vietnamese and the South Koreans and for a German. And all these other races, so they could have the rights that my family couldn't get here right at home, and they died for that. You see, and you have a police officer, in closing, who did a routine traffic stop. The guy got scared, jumped out of the car, and he started to run away from the police. The policeman shot him in the back, you know, I don't know how many times he shot him and killed him, lied on the form, the report, and said the guy had a weapon,
Right.
And even
right.
if he had a weapon, it's not a death sentence. It's not that police officer's job to try him, convict him, and give him the death. That's not a death sentence for having a weapon. Lied and said he had a weapon.
Yeah.
And even if he did, I don't understand how a white kid can go into elementary school and kill children.
All right, so let me just jump in here. And I did ask for folks to express their perspective. Obviously, there are a few points here and there I'd interact with, but I don't want to give you the impression of rejecting what you're saying. Here's the point, and I asked a question. Why do many more black Americans believe that the hands-up, don't-shoot narrative was true with my namesake Michael Brown in Ferguson, whereas all the evidence we have says it wasn't true? Now, our caller just mentioned a situation where a police officer killed a man that was running away and then allegedly planted a gun and said, look, he had a weapon. And, well, he's been convicted, right? He's out of the police force, and he's been convicted for his actions. But here's the point that Ron's making. And some of you are bristling and disagree with this or that. Here's the point Ron's making. There's history. People, through their experience, either their lifetime or their parents, grandparents' experience, colors how they see things. How I relate to police, my dad was a senior lawyer in the New York Supreme Court. To this day, I call officers sir if I see them. Now, I do that politely with if I'm walking down a hallway and there's someone cleaning the floor in a hotel, I'll say, hi, sir. I'm always trying to be respectful and honor people. But I grew up a certain way. I had an uncle that was a police officer. And yeah, when I was in trouble with police is when I was a drug user and breaking into houses. I knew I should be in trouble, okay? Others have different experiences, and that's the point that I want to get across, and that's where we need to talk to each other, all right? And you may have an issue and differ with Ron and push back, but I'm glad, and Ron, thank you for calling, sir. I'm glad that Ron called and laid that out. And now the big question is, okay, the past is past. Where are we today? How do we, as a people, as America, as one nation under God, how do we come together to help fix problems? Where there's a perception of injustice and it's not there, how do we get rid of that perception? Where there is injustice and it's being ignored, how do we deal with it? My listening and engagement tells me this, that many times white Americans don't see racism when it is there. Many times black Americans see it when it isn't there. As we have conversations, we can learn from each other. I wanted to get into some thoughts about the sexual revolution and why it's bound to fail and why transgender activism is bound to fail. We'll come back to those things. Maybe I'll write some on it as well. Remember, catch up with my latest articles. Got a new article on Justice Roy Moore winning in Alabama, what that means. I've got an article asking pastors, are you shepherds or hirelings? A controversial issue with black leader Jesse Lee Peterson on video. All those on the website, AskDrBrown.org. But I do have this appeal to NFL players and NFL owners. I know right now you're fighting back against President Trump. I know right now the big protest is against the president. But I want to urge you, because you're losing sponsors, people are dropping out, losing popularity. I read Rajon Elway, famous quarterback and now a leader of a Denver Broncos team, executive leader, that he wants to get rid of the politics, get back to playing football. I think that's how most football players feel. How about just going on with the anthem? I think people would be pleased if you all just stood for the anthem, because it conveys respect for the country. It conveys respect for the soldiers, the sacrificed, and are sacrificing right now. Stand for that. And now America's listening. They know that there are issues and that there are questions of justice and fair treatment for all in America. You have the ear of the nation. If you stand, you get the respect of many in the nation. And then say, hey, we love this country. We honor America. We want to see America great. And we're concerned that there are problems in America. Can we sit down and have a conversation together? I believe that's the way to go. And I believe we've made progress. And I believe the president, I believe this, would actually invite key sports figures into the White House to say, let's have a conversation. If he saw them take a stand to honor the flag. Just my thoughts today. All right, friends, again, AskDrBrown.org is the place to go. And Saving a Sick America, it is now.